back, everyone, to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel. Hope everyone is having a good summer so far, staying cool, taking some time off. We are at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on all the streaming platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, and so much more. If you are listening to us on one of those platforms, if you could give us a shout out, give us some stars, maybe subscribe if you haven't done so already. We can always use the love, and we are all about careers in music, so we want to spread the word all about this podcast, giving the ins and outs of the music industry and, hey, how people did get that music job, how they succeeded in their dreams and their ambitions, how they pursued their goal of their careers in music, and also a lot of really, really good wisdom, advice, and insight, especially for artists, DIY indie artists that are looking to expand their brand, to reach new platforms, reach new levels, navigate this new music landscape that seems to be changing on an hourly basis. We got it all right here. So you can either check us out at musicjobspodcast.com or the streaming platforms. So last week I had the pleasure of interviewing Sandra Olinger. She is the founder owner of grimygoods.com, a very, very popular music lifestyle website blog, and she actually just celebrated 10 years, and she's also launched another project called Grimy Diapers for rock and roll moms. So really, really great projects. It was also great to talk to her all about, you know, starting her own business, her career as a music writer, reporter, what it was like to be a woman doing, you know, music festival reviews, interviewing artists, traveling all over the world. Just really, really fascinating stuff. So go on back and check it out if you haven't done so already. So it's our 30th episode. I'm very excited, and I cannot think of a better person to kick things off with than J. Michael Dolan. He is the founder of Music Connection Magazine. He is truly an icon in the industry. He just has one hell of a reputation. He is a best-selling author of several books, and he is a consultant and avid popular blogger. And this interview was just a really, really fun, interesting, spiritual, innovative, inspiring talk. We go obviously through his career trajectory, which is incredible, but we really kind of get to the nitty-gritty of what it's all about and what it means to be an artist, entrepreneur, and how you navigate and how you serve. It was just such a pleasure talking to him, and I think that you will get so much out of this interview as I have. So before we kick things off, we are actually going to start with one of Michael's favorite songs, and it's one of my favorites as well, All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. Nothing you can know that isn't known. Nothing you can see that isn't shown. There's no way you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Hey, Michael.
Hey, L-A-R-E-L.
Thanks for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. I'm so thrilled. So tell us a little bit about childhood. Tell us about the kind of household you grew up in and what kind of music was being played.
You know, first of all, I have to tell you, L-Ariel, I can see why you asked this question. You know, I've listened to your previous podcast, and I can see why this question is, you know, has value, because it shows the stepping stones that people took to finally arrive at their ultimate destination, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it strikes me that those stepping stones are actually choices and decisions that we make all along the way that lead us to our destiny, right? Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your question. I never like to talk about, oh, tell me about your childhood and your past. I never like to go there. I would rather talk about what's going on today and tomorrow rather than what happened yesterday. But I really, I get it. And I appreciate the question. So that said, what was the question? No, I'm just okay, tell us a little bit about your childhood and music. Well, I was born in Santa Monica, California.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it is lovely.
That's where I live.
You live there now?
Yeah.
That's it. I don't live there now. But my wife and I live up in Westlake Village, Thousand Oaks area, which is still nevertheless beautiful and not that far from the ocean. Love it. Santa Monica. Southern California is a beautiful, beautiful place to live and raise a family.
Mm-hmm.
I guess these are stepping stones leading to somewhere. I guess the first one for me began with living in a house where there was a piano and a record player that were in the same room right in the center of the house. All of us in the family had access to play either one of those at any time. You could sit at the piano and bang away, or you could turn on the record player anytime. So as far as music, I think my dad listened to Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Perry Como, Dean Martin, those guys, those boys. My older sister Judy listened to Connie Francis, Frankie Avalon, Barbara Streisand. My little sister Julie listened to Elton John and Led Zeppelin. My mom loved movie soundtracks like Oklahoma, Guys and Dolls, and of course, West Side Story. I think West Side Story got the most airplay of any album in the house. I mean, mm-hmm. We were singing that music in our house. And I mostly listened to Beach Boys, The Byrds, Elvis, and of course, The Beatles. Just lots and lots and lots of Beatles. It's not that music was playing all the time. It's just that it was accessible. Any one of us, anytime, could go in there and put on a record, and nobody else would be bothered or distracted. Or sure, let's listen to Barbara Streisand. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so music was around. So probably that was a first stepping stone for me. That music's in the house, music's around. I like music. Music is great.
Mm-hmm.
Stepping stone two for me was probably lessons. And in my family, we were encouraged to take really any kind of lessons we wanted. In fact, my little sister, Julie, who has truly become a very successful actress and a voiceover artist and a musician, she started out playing the tuba. And she was so little. She was so tiny, but that's the instrument she wanted to start playing. My older sister took tap dancing lessons and piano, and I kind of followed in her footsteps, not with the tap dancing. I stumbled all over the place with tap dancing, but I reveled in the piano. I loved the piano at a young age. And at the same time, I began singing in the church choir. So with piano lessons, some singing lessons in the church choir, followed by years later with some drum lessons, and then followed a few years later with teaching myself how to play guitar, lessons and learning, and putting in those hours of practice was paramount, not only for the instrument, not that we got great at those instruments or I got great at those instruments. It was just like, you know, the discipline of doing something I really, really, really enjoyed and got acknowledgement for.
Mm-hmm.
My parents and our teachers actually were very acknowledging, you know, with, I'd sit down at the piano and bang something out. My mom would go, oh, that sounds so great. And it didn't. You know, I'm just banging away, you know. but as a young age, at a young age, I think that acknowledgement was so valuable to me. It just led me on to do the next thing. In fact, led my sisters on to do the next thing because we had so much support from our awesome parents.
Mm-hmm. So when did you have that moment where you were like, I want to make a career out of this?
Yeah, well, that came early in my teenage years. That would be the next stepping stone, you know. And of course, in the 60s, 70s, being in a band was it, you know, mm-hmm. That was the career. So I put together a band, a couple of bands, but I ended up doing one. It was called The Realm. We didn't think we were going to make it. We knew we were going to make it. We really had a cocky attitude about it. And we practiced. My parents allowed us to build a little rehearsal studio in the back of the garage, which was just awesome. And we had one record that got a little radio play in L.A. only. Zero traction on the Billboard charts, and the career didn't happen. But the truth is, rock stardom didn't happen. But the truth is, during that decade of performing music live, you know, I kind of got my 10,000 hours in at that point.
Yeah.
Playing and performing and being in front of people and on stage and singing. And that was just a great, great time in my life. However, at some point, you know, I had to make a buck, you know, doing something. So stepping stone number four was probably photography. My dad was a photographer, and I built a dark room in the back where the studio used to be, and started developing my own pictures, taking classes in photography. And I used to actually shoot actors for a living. That was my job, go out and shoot an actor. You were supposed to laugh at that point. That was supposed to be a funny thing, Hilario.
Sorry. I just thought, all I thought was, oh, wow, he's like TMZ.
No.
That's what I thought. I was like, wow.
Oh, I see what you mean. No. These are headshots for
actors. Got it. So you weren't hiding in the bushes, jumping out at... Got it. Okay. So, I do have a... Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Did you... Because you were saying, I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
And now you're a photographer. So did you have this moment of like, I need to put the music dream on the back burner, or it was a pipe dream, I'm not going to make it? Like, what was your thought at the time?
Yeah, two things. First thing was I always think I'm going to make it. I still think someday I'm going to make it. I don't know. I look forward and I go, yeah, you know, this is working out. If this works out, maybe I'll make it. You know, I don't know if I say it in those words today, but, you know, I always look forward to something wonderful happening. That's number one. And number two, I never gave up music. I guess there was a back burner, and I guess I slid things over to the back burner. Better said, I prioritized things differently.
I like that.
When the band broke up after, you know, many years of working on it, you know, we had been doing it since teenagers, and we all had to, you know, we got to have start creating a life and that kind of thing. It was a sad day. I mean, it was a very sad day. And my thinking was, well, I'll just go out and start another band and do that. But I took a different road. I was standing there at a crossroads called, do I want to continue to pursue a music career?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to go off and make a buck doing something different? And the photography thing was a minor stepping stone. I thought it was my calling for a moment. I did it for about a year or two, learned a lot about composition, learned a lot about photography, but it too was not it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, and I'd always enjoyed writing. And so I began stepping stone number five, if you will, or four, wherever I'm at on the stone thing.
I think you're at five.
I began writing and submitting fiction stories to magazines and newspapers and Reader's Digest. I entered a few national fiction writing contests. And for a brief moment, I thought, oh, writing, that's what I'm going to do. This is it. This all makes sense. There were just so many rejection letters I got. It was just piled up. I wrote a musical play, and I really had a good connection to get that play produced. And fell out, didn't happen, nothing happened. There was a lot of rejection there. None of it went anywhere, but I guess it was part of my creative process. But then eventually all those steps kind of led me to, okay, I want to get serious here. And I guess the next stepping stone was, the truth is, everybody in my family, my dad, my uncles, cousins, everybody worked in show business in one capacity or another. Nobody was rich and famous, but everybody made a pretty good living in various areas of show business. And I was always encouraged, particularly by my father, that, you know, he could get me in. What do you want to do? When do you want to do it? Come on in and do what I do. And I always resisted that. Hmm. His dad saying, come on and do what I do, or what the family does. But finally, I said, okay, where should I, what's the next step I should take here? So I was invited in to work at a company called Technicolor. And I did background engineering and color timing projection. I had to join a union, an IATSE local at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I walked in the door and started working, I never stopped working for about a little over 10 years. Never stopped working in the motion picture and television industry. I worked at literally every motion picture studio and every television station for 10 years. And why? Because I was in the union and I just mm-hmm. kept getting called. Oh, you want to work over here at ABC Television? We got a show. We got a thing. We need you to work over there. Oh, we're going to go over here at Warner Brothers. We got a job for you. Work for a couple of weeks over there. And that was the gig. And it was a good 10-year run. I got my 10,000 hours in that industry as well.
Yeah.
And that was a real, real education on Hollywood, how Hollywood works. And I ended up with working with some of the great directors in Hollywood. I worked with Francis Ford Coppola, literally sat beside him and worked on The Godfather. This was at Technicolor doing color timing. That whole movie was shot with sepia tone, and each frame had to be analyzed and colored. And I was on location with Tom Laughlin, with Billy Jack, the movie, Stanley Kramer with Oklahoma Crude, Martin Ranzelhoff with Silver Streak, with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. Mm-hmm. I was a location projectionist at the time. And finally ended up at the final parking place was the CBS News, Sunday News with Charles Carroll, which was my last job in television and the motion picture industry. And after a good 11-year run, I got laid off. The industry took a dive. This was in the 70s, early 80s, late 70s. Industry took a dive. Layoffs were rampant in the unions. And I got laid off. First time I ever got laid off. Hmm. It was great. I was happy. Oh, man. It gave me an opportunity to, you know, pick up a guitar and start performing music again. And I really honed my guitar skills and did a little acting at that point, at that brief thing. I thought maybe acting was it. Probably for about 30 seconds, I thought acting might be it. Did a couple of plays, you know, local 99 seat equity waiver type of plays. And acting wasn't it for me. It was fun, but it wasn't it for me. But I did meet a guy when I did this acting thing, and we started playing guitar. We put together a duo. We started playing guitar, and I did that, just singing and playing guitar. And if everybody's familiar with Southern California, it was Westwood Village, Marina Del Rey, all those little restaurants and nightclubs. And,
yep.
You know, I was the guy sitting there with the guitar singing John Denver songs. That was another cue for you to laugh, El Ariel. That was another cue.
I love John Denver. I'm not going to laugh. He was one of my favorites.
I'm throwing out the cues here. And while I was doing that, I did that for a couple of years. It was fun. It was great. I was making a buck, making a living with my guitar. I went, oh, my God, this is great. Writing songs, submitting songs. I came up with the idea for Music Connection magazine. Mm-hmm. you know, there's a long story there, but to make a long story short, I actually, when I got the idea for Music Connection, I thought, well, gee, if I start this magazine, I'll probably meet a lot of people in the music industry, which will help my songwriting and performing career. Oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. Kind of doing what you're doing. I'll interview a bunch of people on a podcast, and maybe I'll meet somebody, and there'll be a connection, and who knows what'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the same thing.
So I basically stole your playbook.
You did. You did. Well, I got to tell you, it worked for me because it lasted 33 years that, you know, my career at Music Connection. So just to back up a second and leading to your great question that you ask all of your guests, you know, I guess you can follow the steps that lead to your final, whatever your destination is, final or not, but you never know where those steps are going to take you. For me, yep. It was, you know, the movie business, being in a band for 10 years, being in the movie TV business for 10 years, photography, writing, it all led to a career in publishing.
Yep.
Which, when I look back, boy, that makes sense. The photography, the writing, the showbiz, this makes a lot of sense, publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly your steps come together, but man, you don't know where that step you're on is going to lead you. You do come to those crossroads, right? I came to those crossroads in my life called, all right, what am I going to do next? And what am I going to do next? And where is it going to lead me? You just don't know that. So I guess that's the beauty of...
Did you feel that your experience in the entertainment industry and your writing and your photography, that gave you, because it's pretty audacious to start a magazine, especially if your previous 10 years plus was in the movie business or the entertainment business. But do you feel like that gave you the confidence because you had all this writing, photography, the entertainment experience,
you know,
in your back pocket?
My father was a super duper entrepreneur. He had a stable career in the movie industry. He had a stable career. However, he always went out and started up businesses. He just started up businesses, and they would fail, and some would work, and some wouldn't. But I, you know, my sisters and I are entrepreneurial that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at artists and entrepreneurs at exactly the same. We all have to make it up day by day by day, hour by hour. It's choices and decisions. What am I going to do next to grow whatever it is I'm growing here?
Mm-hmm.
For me, starting a magazine was more in the box of, oh, I got an idea. I'll go out and start a magazine with zero experience. Had I taken a journalism class or majored in journalism in college, I never, ever, ever would have started the magazine. I mean, there would have been too many roadblocks, too many things. Oh, I got to do this. I have to do this. And when I started Music Connection, I was just literally making it up. I mean, literally making it up. I just looked at other magazines and said, oh, well, we'll do that. I guess I'll need writers. Okay, I guess I'll need a printer. Okay, I get it. I guess I kind of want it to look like this, but I don't want it to look like that. I looked at an empty space and said, gee, I think I can fill up that space. Because at the time, Billboard and Record World and Cashbox were the big established music industry trades.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing for the hardworking musicians in between the street and the elite. There,
mm-hmm.
was, there was nothing there. And I happened to be at the time a performing singer-songwriter. And so when I would go out and pick up a Billboard, they were speaking to me. I didn't, you know, I mean, I read it, I skimmed it, but it didn't directly talk about me and my plight. So I thought there was room for a magazine that would speak to working musicians, you know. So I took a chance. It was really a shot in the dark. The idea was to start weekly. However, somewhere along the line, and this was another business that I started that I didn't think it was going to work. I knew it was going to work. And I don't know where that knowing comes from. I think you can learn things or you can know things, you know. And sometimes we know things that we never learned, that no one ever told us, that we never read in a book. We just know it. We can't prove it. but we just know it. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I've got this song. I know this could be a hit. Or I have this script. I know this could work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we can know things. And I think what was important for me is to follow the knowing. Is to follow that knowing. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, so all it is a hunch. All it is a gut feeling. But for me, following my gut, you know, always kind of led me somewhere, mm-hmm. you know. So I followed my gut on this one. But the idea was to start weekly. I hope I'm not jumping all over the place here.
No, you're good. You're good.
I did get a glimpse, Ariel, that, okay, this could really work. So I brought in an old friend, a very good friend at the time, Eric Battelli, and asked him if he wanted to partner up with me. And he didn't even take a breath. He just jumped right in. And together, we took Music Connection to the moon. We were in our 20s. We were in our 20s at the time, making this stuff up. He had no experience at all. Mm-hmm. He was a fellow projectionist in the industry. He wanted to get out of his way. He was getting laid off, too. And he said, yeah, let's just jump in and do this. So we made it up. We just made it up. And it took about 3 years to make a buck. It took about 3 years before we ever started taking a paycheck. Every issue, we would publish an issue, and boy, those early issues were pretty funky. You know, we were just slapping them together. They were like newsletters with a cover, you know. And we would stand across the street from a newsstand at the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Cahuenga. It was called World Book of News. We would stand across the street and we would watch to see if anybody would buy a copy of Music Connection.
Aww.
And rarely anybody. Once in a while, somebody would pick it up and go, okay, look, they're picking it up. And then they put it back down. Yeah, okay. And these were the days of no internet, no Google.
Right.
Zero marketing. The word marketing was not on our radar.
Mm-hmm.
The word of mouth was big on our radar.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Eric had this great idea of, we put together a flyer of about all about Music Connection, and he took it to 7-Elevens all around Southern California. And he said, you know, here's what we're doing. We're doing this magazine, and he begged them for placement. Not only in 7-Eleven, but right next to Variety, Hollywood Reporter, and Billboard, where they would have the trades in those 7-Elevens, the magazine rack. And he'd say, you know, we'll give you half price. Some of those 7-Elevens, we gave them the magazine for free. Just, you know, just let it sit. And that helped tremendously.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That moved the dial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
And then after 5 or 6 years, we were doing pretty good. We had a good staff of employees, and I tell you, we would hire employees one at a time, somebody to answer the phone, somebody to help sell advertising, somebody to be an assistant editor. But after 5 or 6 years, it was moving along fairly nicely. So then I got the idea of doing Songwriter Magazine. I go, hey, why don't we do 2 magazines? And that took a long time to put that together. It's kind of expensive. And then we put out Songwriter Magazine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were doing 2 of them. I think, you know, as I look back, what I'm really grateful for is, you know, my dad's entrepreneurial sense, and that I did not study journalism in college. I did not study publishing. And that we just made things up. It usually came from a gut feeling I had or an idea I had. And we would try things out. We never, stopped trying things out. We go, let's try that out and see if it flies. Boy, that's a lesson to me today. That's a lesson for everyone, I hope, today is, to never, ever, ever be afraid of following your heart, following your gut, following that knowing.
Mm-hmm.
God, mm-hmm. I can't prove to anybody this is going to work, but I can know it.
Yep. Yep.
And you follow that.
Yep. Absolutely. I think too, this idea, you know, and I've been a victim of this myself, or I should say guilty of this, is like, I just need to take another class. I just need, I need to take this workshop. I don't know enough. I don't have enough information. And the idea that precisely the fact that you don't know how to do it, and I'm doing air quotes right now, don't know how to do it actually serves you so much better. It's like ignorance. Knowledge is not power. Ignorance is power.
Well, it's the beautiful Zen thing to live in a beginner's mind, to always be in a beginner's mind. And I love that. I love that whole philosophy of, to trust your heart. You know, the real deep Hindu philosophy of, in Buddhism and in Zen, it's all about, honoring that spirit within you, and honoring that creative spirit within you as well. I do believe that with artists and entrepreneurs are mostly, I think you'll agree with me, are mostly right brain sort of creative people. It's best to be right down the middle with an analytical left side and a creative right side. But a lot of us are right brain kind of people. And for me, there's always, since I was a kid, there's always been this constant streaming, that nonstop, of ideas and videos and, thoughts and things to do and things to make and things to invent. And it's just a non-streaming. And I think other people have a different stream. I think people over in the left brain, well, they have a different stream. They have maybe an analytical one, and which is great, But I think us artists and entrepreneurs have this constant, we get ideas. And then, like you say, oh, I get this great idea. And then we have a choice. Well, I think I'll go out and take a class and let somebody else tell me how to do this idea.
Yep, yep.
Or you stand at that crossroads and go, well, I'll take a shot. I'll take a shot, and maybe I'll make it up. Or you go out and learn things as you need them. If you need to know about marketing, maybe you'll need to know marketing. Well, maybe it's time to learn about a little bit about distribution. Well, now we can learn about it because we've got an entire world in the palm of our hand. Mm-hmm. We can just, look up, music distribution, and we can get an education like crazy.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a real blessing for me. I'm thankful that I lean toward more the right side. Being in business for so many years, really sucked me over to the left side of my brain. So hopefully, I try to run down the middle, because all the business and the money and the investing and the running a company and the employees and all that, that's pretty much for me over on the left side. Am I making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then the creating of whatever idea you have is always on the right side. I think having a whole brain is where we want to get to.
Yeah. The other point I wanted to bring up, and maybe you already know this, or maybe you're going to tell me like, no, that's not it at all. But I think what caught my attention is you were a union man for 10 years. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I see in terms of your trajectory and going forward after Music Connection magazine and moving forward is you are in the business though of serving others, like speaking for and getting information for your fellow working musicians. It wasn't just like, I want to make it big. It was like, how can I help? How can I get information to working musicians? Working musicians need a magazine. And I see, your consulting, your blog, everything sort of, unfolding from that. And you can obviously go more into detail about it, but in service to others.
I'm so glad you see that. You've really done your homework and you've gone deep into my world. And,
I told you I stole your playbook.
Yeah, you did. I was looking for that playbook. I couldn't find it. You must have stolen it. You know, serving others, helping others, isn't that everything? Isn't that really everything? When you finally get to that place where it's not all about me, 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 and my needs, it's really we're all in this together. That, to me, is everything. I have to tell you, it's everything. You know, how can I help? I wake up in the morning. I do my meditation. I've been meditating daily for a little over 30 years and couldn't go through the day without it. It's all about, you know, what do you want me to do today? How can I help today? And then I go through my day. I don't go through my day sniffing around, gee, how can I help that person? But it's in the backdrop for sure. I think that speaks to really all of us. If you get down behind the, I need to make a buck, I need to be successful, I need to prove something to my family or whoever. When you get down just one layer underneath all that, it's, you know, how can I take who I am and what I do and manifest it in such a way that it not only benefits me, it benefits everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I think when you get to that place, it's things really start to happen. The universe starts to dance with you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's when things come in and you're willing to let things go out. And, you know, abundance comes in or money comes in and you're willing to let money go out. And so there's a beautiful flow, if you want to call it that, or a beautiful dance with life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and not that it's, you know, a new agey kind of thing, not that it's magical or mystical. For me, gee, it just makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. You know, you water the plant sucks up all the water and shares it with all the plants around it. And then a flower shows up. Oh my God, look at that. So I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, and what we do as artists, you know, I mean, if we have that in the background, then the roller coaster ride may not be quite as intense, you know. And I believe, you know, when I write my blogs, I'm speaking for me. I'm speaking what's going on with me. I never write these blogs ahead of time. I'm never ahead of the game, ever. I write them on the spot. They actually reflect, you know, kind of what I'm looking at, kind of what I'm grappling with. They come out of, you know, a bazillion emails I get from my readers and conversations I have with my clients, who both my clients and readers are just a fantastic, talented group of crazy geniuses and risk takers. But that's where the ideas come from. I jot down ideas for blogs. But I do think if I just am truthful with what I'm writing and honest, this is what's going on with me, I think it would reach out and bounce off of other people too. I think maybe other people think, gee, you know, that's going on with me too. Or that's what I think too. Or that's really what I want to learn something more about too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think every crazy genius artist and risk-taking entrepreneur in the world, successful or not, knows exactly what that roller coaster ride is, knows exactly what the ride is you go through to maintain your adventurous, risky, creative lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
And man, if you ask me, I keep saying man. I never say it out there. I never go, hey, man.
It's the SoCal thing.
I think it's the SoCal thing, and you're really cool, and so it's a cool thing. I think there's nothing quite like having a creative life, you know, an adventurous, risky, creative lifestyle. It's worth the roller coaster ride, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it.
Yep. Yep.
And that's what I like to write about in my blogs, you know, the roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask, kind of dovetail into that. Because I know you like to talk about today and tomorrow and mm-hmm. this idea of the artist and the entrepreneur, but also being of service. Like, I think these are actually very logical ideas because, you know, one of my favorite marketing books is The Blue Ocean Strategy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all about looking for markets that are underserved.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's that who doesn't have a voice? who really needs support, direction? You know, I mean, Uber started in San Francisco because people couldn't hail a cab, right? It was like all these people that needed a cab, and the cabs weren't available or not going to the certain neighborhoods or whatever.
Well, and, sure.
And I just feel like today, and I'd love you to talk about this, you know, but this idea of artist entrepreneur as kind of being the same thing now. And how do you navigate this current landscape and serve these underserved markets?
Gosh, well said. Great questions and very well said. And you're right. If you ask me, there is nothing like the opportunities that are available today that never existed in the past. In the past, there was a protocol. There was a top 10 list on how to make it. And that list has been disrupted, ripped up, and tossed out the window.
Yep.
And I don't know if tomorrow there'll be another protocol list of here's how you make it. But I do know today we're living in the time of disruption, and we're living in the time of a technical revolution that is really benefiting the world in a phenomenal way.
Mm-hmm.
And right down to the seat that we sit in, right down to the palm of our hand, having all knowledge known to man in the palm of our hand is an amazing miracle. So how do you navigate that as artists and entrepreneurs? Well, you know, I do believe that we are currently living in that the industry is a make it up kind of industry right now.
Mm.
And we're kind of living in that sort of anything goes kind of an industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been that way for the last decade or two. A decade of disruption, you know, and our industry is currently operating in that anything goes mode where imaginative, ingenious possibilities rule the roost.
Yep.
And therefore, I think we as artists and entrepreneurs need to be aware of and have our radar up when people are talking about the good old days. Well, God bless them. God bless you in the good old days. But what we need to do is be vigilant for the opportunities that the tech revolution is presenting us and leave the door wide open for the unimaginable. These are the good old days, if you ask me.
Hmm.
You know, today is there, I believe, from my perch, from my point of view, I think there's a profound opportunity for artists to harness their unique talent to create art and create commerce that will inspire people and express the truth in our art. We're so free now. There's such an opening for us to express truth in our art. And that's what really all of us are craving today. More truth in our life, more truth from our leaders, of course, more truth in our personal relationships. That's what artists and entrepreneurs do. You know, we use our gut feelings as a lens to see what's missing, to see what's wanted and needed, to see the truth. And then we use our precious gift of creativity and our incredible talent, along with all the tech tools available today, to manifest it. Make sense?
Yeah.
And so when you're walking down the street and you go, hey, why do we need a taxi cab? I got an idea. Why don't we just have everybody use their own cars and drive everybody else around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what are you, nuts? These are the days of making it up like that. And for, I think, my generation of baby boomers, that's very difficult to take risks like that because, you know, baby boomers are reaching a certain age where, you know, you want to lower your risk, not, you know, expand your risks. Younger people, just the generation even under. Generation X, I guess that is, right? What's the generation under the baby boom?
It's Gen X, yeah.
From that generation on, it's come on, let's take a shot. Let's make it up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's disrupt. Let's take that idea and go to the moon. Let's not wait to, like I didn't wait to get a college degree, or I didn't, there was no top 10 list. I just said, let's go for it. And these are the days of going for it. I think LRL, especially in show business, especially in the entertainment business, there's so, you know, the entertainment industry has shrunk too. So now you can be a musician, but you know what? You can also compose and produce soundtracks for TV or gaming. And you can be an actor, but you can also be a great voiceover artist. You know, you can direct your own movies. You can make your own movies. You can produce your own movies. I mean, again, maybe tomorrow there'll be a protocol like there was in the past. Top 10 ways to make it in show business. But today, it strikes me, just from my POV, from my point of view, it strikes me that it's wide open. And I support, always support my clients and my readers to take risks, to swing out there, to trust your gut, to trust your heart, like that.
Yeah.
I love these days. I love these days. Mm. And who knows how long they will last. The tech gurus will tell you that it's going to go off the edge, you know, that it's going to keep changing. We're going to keep upgrading our phones, upgrading our tech, printing our bicycles, you know, sitting in cars that are driving us around. It's just going to keep growing and growing exponentially all the way to the end. And I'm in it for the ride. I can't wait for a driverless car. I can sit back with my iPad and get some work done for crying out loud.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing is too, though, a lot of people, and you made this great point earlier, but I think there is sort of a glut of information and a lot of sort of useless information, and people get paralyzed. It's almost like, you know, because we have literally everything in the world in the palm of our hand, I think people can get overwhelmed. But I think what you said earlier about, you know, starting Music Connection, it's like you didn't take a publishing class. You didn't Google, how do I start a music magazine? Obviously, Google wasn't around, but you know what I mean? It's like you just did it. And I think that that is really inspiring. And I think, again, it's what you're talking about taking that risk and following your heart and not feeling like I have to get the approval of all my Twitter followers, or I have to have, you know, pay somebody a ton of money, you know, or go on a Shark Tank or whatever the hell. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, again, very well said. And for me, you know, what's at the toppermost of the poppermost is commitment. I think, and people overuse the word, oh, here, now he's going to talk about commitment. But I got to tell you, it doesn't matter if you're a fledgling songwriter or the CEO of a megacorp. Mm. The commitment to get there is top priority. How you're going to get there is second.
Yep.
So the commitment to get there is top priority. How you're going to do it, I don't know. But man, I am committed to get there. And to the degree that we are ruthlessly committed, I tell this to all my clients. My clients and I, we rip this stuff apart. And for me, to the degree that we are ruthlessly committed to achieving our biggest goals, to that degree, we'll either achieve them or get pretty darn close. Mm-hmm. And that's not like positive thinking. That's more like a well-built foundation to stand on. And, you know, one last thing that is, for me, so obvious about this thing about commitment, that, you know, once you go up to the mountaintop and plant your flag and say, this I shall do, I am now committed to this project or to this career, this I shall do. So once you plant that flag of commitment, when you come down off the mountain, I think that your choices and decisions are a lot easier to deal with. Because once you've made a profound, ruthless commitment to whatever it is that you do, whenever a choice or a decision comes up, you simply ask yourself, does this decision I'm about to make correlate, or is it consistent with my commitment? Mm-hmm. If it is, you do it. If it isn't, you don't.
Yep.
And boy, if you can hold on to that, if you can, number one, make a profound, ridiculous, absurd, impossible commitment, because if you make attainable ones, I'm not sure how far we get, but if you make impossible ones, wow, the dial gets moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time a decision comes up or a choice comes up, which they do, not daily, but hourly, moment by moment, I got to decide. Right now, I got to decide what I'm going to say. You're thinking, well, I got to decide, am I going to listen to this guy or am I going to ask him another question? You know, we're constantly looking at choices and decisions. And to the degree we can ask ourselves, you know, is this choice I'm about to make consistent with my commitment?
Yeah.
If it is, then you do it. If it's not, then you don't. And these conversations, I got to tell you that these conversations for me are everything. When I have conversations with my clients or when I write my blogs, you know, I have to say that I believe that the core of me is about having profound conversations at the deep end of the pool. I love that. More than anything else I do in life, I love sitting with someone who's crazy committed and talented to their goals or to their world, and exploring the depth of our human experiences as it relates to our creative careers in showbiz, to exploring what's blocking us from getting there, what's stopping us. And those conversations at the deep end of the pool are what I write about and have conversations with my clients. And I think this is what I do best in my life. I think this is what everything, all those crazy stepping stones have ultimately led to at this stage of my life, at this point of view of my life. And whether I do it with my clients or writing or blogging or the books, I really get a sense that that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
And that's the best way I know how to help. So I look at all that I have and where I've been, and I look at, gee, how can I contribute this? How can I contribute? And that's about the best way I can do it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really powerful. I felt like I was just at church. That was great.
God bless you.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, but I absolutely, I think it's truly powerful, and it is what truly matters. And it is so, so, so easy to lose track of that. And it's so, so easy to just get all caught up in what everyone else is doing. And, you know, how many likes does this person have? And why are they more popular than I am? And why, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I guess if you were going to sum anything up, it would be, what would it be? It'd be trust the experiences you've had to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Trust all those experiences you had, you got to trust that those experiences we've had, even the failures, they've taught us something.
Yep.
And I guess honor the knowledge that we've acquired and have confidence in our talents and abilities and our skills. And I guess, you know, we're all acquiring wisdom along the way, right? Along this crazy journey of being an artist and a creative entrepreneur, we're all acquiring wisdom along the way. And I guess we need to trust that wisdom to guide us to the next place.
Yeah, well said. All right, well, I have to let you get on with the business at hand. But
thank you.
Will you tell people how they can find you? Tell them all about your books, your website, your blog.
Well, I do have 6 books up on Amazon.com. The author would be jmichaeldolan.com. Or J. Michael Dolan at Amazon. But the best way to connect with me, the best way to discover who I am, what I'm about, is to check out my website, jmichaeldolan.com. That's initial J, michaeldolan.com. Thank you for that. Thank you for allowing me to
Thank you so much. I love it. I could talk to you for hours and hours.
And I love your, I love what you're up to. I love the podcast. I've listened to them all, and I encourage you to keep going. Who knows where this stepping stone in your life is going to lead?
Mm-hmm.
But they can only get better and more interesting, right? They only get more interesting. They're already great. You really have a good a good style, and I appreciate it, El Ariel, very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wasn't that just amazing? I am so, so excited that I got to chat with him as long as I did and get the benefit of his wisdom and insight. And just, it was just such a moving, incredible discussion, and also a lot of fun. And I hope that you, everyone, could take a piece of it with you and remember that it is really truly about being of service, that we have gifts that we are, I think, obligated and have a duty to share with the world. So thank you again to Michael for stating that so beautifully and so eloquently. And again, you can find him at jmichaeldolan.com. That's jmichaeldolan.com. You can subscribe to his blog there. You can check out his books on Amazon.com or wherever fine books are sold. So thus ends another episode of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Episode 30. Thank you so much again for being such a great part of this journey with me. And again, we are on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and Android. So check us out. We are also on social media at Music Jobs Podcast. So go on and give us a follow and say hello. And I am your host, El Ariel, and I just dropped an EP called Diatribe, which is on Spotify and Tidal and Apple Music and wherever fine music is sold. And I also just dropped a music video for one of the tracks, Feel It Low. So if you want to check me out in my 80s gear, all my 80s glory, you can do so at YouTube on my channel, L.Ariel, or my website, LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. So I want everyone to take good care. Many, many blessings to you as you continue your journey. And remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you dare give up.